Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Michael Tunnell joins me. We're going to be talking about Invoice Ninja, a great solution for small businesses to get everything they need in invoicing, time tracking, everything. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Michael Tunnell. Episode 506, recorded November 14th, 2018. Invoice Ninja. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, a podcast from Red Hat. Listen to the epic true tales of the developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels revolutionizing the technology landscape. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit redhat.com/heroes today. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of, but projects you might want to play with right after the show today is probably one of those. Joining me once again, it's been so long since we've seen him last, is Michael Tunnell, who was actually the guest last week, but he's now one of our co-hosts, one of our rotating panel of co-hosts, or panel of rotating co-hosts. I have no idea which word ordering is there. Welcome back, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to be my first time doing a co-host, and I'm also excited to talk about today's guest because I'm a big fan of the project.
Cool. And so today's project, in fact, let's do the where are we speaking to you from thing again first. So I am actually near the same place I was last week. I have points in this condo chain. I won't mention the name because I don't want to buzz market them. But I was here last week, and it just turned out that they had three more days available this week. So I came down this week, too. So I'm not in the same room. So it won't look like I'm Ian. I forgot this last name already. Isaac Asimov. I won't look like I'm Isaac Asimov again. But instead, I've got a beach scene behind me if you're not watching the video. And Michael, where are you speaking to us from?
Birmingham, Alabama. Exact same spot. Well, maybe like slightly an inch or two on the other side.
Okay, very good. And I'm probably about 100 feet from where I was last time, so that's pretty close. Having a great time down here. So today's guest is Invoice Ninja. So we're going to have Hillel Koren. I hope I got that pronounced right, but I guess we'll find out in a second. Is going to be coming on. He's the project leader, and he emailed me about 2 or 3 months ago and said, I've got this really wonderful project that I'd like to be on Floss Weekly with. And that's the best way to get on the show, by the way, is to have the project leader email me. Invoice Ninja claims that it is, where's my notes? It's a powerful suite of online tools so you can invoice clients, collect payments, create proposals, expenses, time tasks, and more. And I think one of the reasons he particularly emailed me is because I've been talking about Flutter for a long time on this show because I'm now a Flutter, a Google developer expert, and I plan on building mobile apps and things like that. Well, apparently he and his team, I guess, have just converted their classic app designs into Flutter. What I love about this project is it's so amazing. Everything is open source. Even the premium versions, which they host for you at a cost, you can actually use those and build them yourself and host them yourself. Everything. Even the Flutter app is open source, which is cool too. So I can actually study it, learn how to do better Flutter apps, things like that. So this is going to be a really, really cool show. So what do you know about Invoice Ninja?
Oh, I'm super excited to talk about this, but I've been a fan of this, and I've also been using the project for many years now, and it's fantastic. You also the fact that you're talking about the open source thing, it's not only just open source. They actually provide instructions on how to self-host it, so they provide like the full set of everything. So you have access to like run the compile things for yourself. They have the desktop app is also open. Like it's fantastic because it gives you a lot of not only. It helps you learn open source. It also gives you a ton of functionality that I never expected for an open source project to have. Like when I first started using it a couple of years ago, I was just blown away by what it had compared to the other open source offerings. And then every like month or so, they bring out like ridiculously great new features. Like they added a calendar system, they added like a task management system, like all kinds of stuff. They even added like a Kanban thing to like be comparative to Trello, like all kinds of stuff they keep adding, and it's fantastic.
Well, and even I was just impressed with the fact that I don't have to host this myself to get a free version of it. They actually will host the lowest tier, which is not really missing that much. It's like only maybe like 10 bullet points that weren't in the lowest tier. But so it's like it's a complete usable system. And as a small business owner, this is really an amazing project. So I'm glad we're going to get some publicity on this today. Anything else before we bring on our guest?
Oh, no. Actually, one of the things I wanted to say about it is that the free tier that you can get on the hosted version is really great, but they also have like the premium versions are not that expensive in the first place. So, you know, there's if you wanted to move up to get the extra features, the premium version is like very cheap in comparison to anything else.
Well, we are going to bring him on in just a second. We're going to be Hill in a second. But before we do that, I do have a very important message. Because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, an original podcast for geeks, by geeks, from Red Hat, an open source company that has been bringing open source technologies to the enterprise for 25 years. What is a Command Line Hero? They are the developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels who are revolutionizing the technology landscape. Command Line Heroes is hosted by Saran Yatbarak, a developer who founded CodeDuby and lives and breathes open source software. Season 2 of Command Line Heroes is all about living on the command line and tracking the changes that shape the world of open source development, from programming languages to learning about supercomputers, hybrid clouds, and more. On the latest episode, hear how DevSecOps teams bring heroes together for better security. Bad security and reliability practices can lead to outages that affect millions. Discovering one vulnerability per month used to be the norm. Now software development moves quickly thanks to agile processes and DevOps teams. Vincent Dannon shares how that's led to a drastic increase in what's considered a vulnerability. Jesse Robbins, the former master of disaster at Amazon, explains how companies prepare for catastrophic breakdowns and breaches. Josh Bressers, head of product security at Elastic, looks to the future of security in tech. Visit redhat.com/heroes to check it out today. Subscribe to Command Line Heroes wherever you get your podcast, and visit redhat.com/heroes for extras and to learn more. That's redhat.com/heroes. And we thank Command Line Heroes from Red Hat for their support of Floss Weekly. And let's go ahead and bring on our guests. Hillel Koren, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm based in Israel.
Okay, cool. So give us a 30,000-foot view. When somebody is reaching for Invoice Ninja, what are they actually looking for?
Sure. So we provide open-source online invoicing package, which includes all related features. That includes tasks, expenses, proposals, reports, pretty much everything you can think of. We've been developing the application for about 5 years now. And just over time, we keep listening to our user base, seeing what they need, and trying to improve the application. And I think key to that is just a very tight feedback loop. We just keep working on it, keep improving it.
And how did you get started in this?
So we started about 5 years ago. I'm a co-founder. I have two amazing partners, Shalom and Dave. And Shalom had the idea to create an online invoicing app. And I remember thinking it was a horrible idea. There were so many solutions even 5 years ago. But really, there were two things that kind of changed my mind. One was his amazing offer, where he said, I'll have half the company if I just manage the developers. And the other thing that kind of happened was I went home to research it, thinking, well, we'll hire developers, I'll use PHP, and I found the framework Laravel. And that really excited me. It seemed like an amazing technology, and it has been. And that was it. That kind of got it started, just kind of nights and weekends messing around with Laravel, learning about it. And just over time, it slowly grew in user base and in features.
And how can you give away so much stuff for free and still make money?
Great question. So first off, I don't look at it as giving away for free. To me, it's what we get back. I see our host and self-host communities as complementary groups. In general, I find the self-host community love to give us their time and incredibly supportive with feedback, but are less willing to pay us money for the product. They're looking for something really kind of inexpensive. Whereas a hosted community in general are looking to save as much time as possible and are happy to give us money in exchange for saving them time. And that combination of groups is incredibly powerful, where we have one group telling us what to do and the other group paying us the money to use the features. And it's really a great cycle we just loop through. So basically, that the top level, high level picture is we don't make much money from our self-host community. We make most of our money from our hosted community. But we depend on our self-host community for the amazing feedback they provide and really help us build a great application.
Awesome. And you have some amazing integrations here, too. I mean, like, I could send an invoice to somebody and they could, or I send a quote to somebody and they can sign off on it. And then I could send them the invoice built from the same quote and then even collect the money using, 30 different payment integrations?
Correct. So for that, we use something called OmniPay, which is a great library or framework for PHP. And it enables us using one API to support many other integrations. For some of those integrations, we have to do additional work for things like ACH support, Alipay, these added features, but we get kind of a lot of the core functionality from one great open source library. And that's kind of our approach in general. We provide a lot of amazing features by leveraging other amazing open source packages and kind of binding them together in our own product.
Wow. And so this is still just amazing. And you have a Flutter app, which is also, I do want to get into that at some point in the show here, but you do have a Flutter app too. And it looks amazing. I was reading through some of the source code this morning. I'm just like, wow, I can really understand how to build a really mature app with that.
That's great to hear. Yeah, it's been an amazing experience. Flutter, we started about 6 months ago. So to talk about it quickly, we had native apps. We had a native Android app and a native iOS app. The challenge is we're an extremely small team, with two developers, and one CEO. So to be able to manage three code bases with two developers was very challenging, especially when you want to build kind of the best in class app. I think you can build a decent app with a small team, but to really build a 5-star application, I think takes tremendous focus. And with Flutter, you know, we went from three code bases down to two. So it's just a massive win for us, and enables us to really focus on the app and build what we think is, you know, one of the best mobile invoicing apps.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true that one of the things you said was really interesting about having the self-hosted community, while not being really the main funding source, they also provide a lot of feedback and stuff like that. And I've actually been a part of that community, and without, you know, in any intent of ever, you know, basically just contributing because I wanted to make the project better. So I was suggesting things like making that task manager app for the desktop using like Natifier, which is a fantastic platform to make your own stuff through Electron. And
right.
You did.
Yeah.
The reason I was saying is because when I suggested that, I didn't really expect anything to come of it. And then I got a message, like notification from Trello saying like, you know, latest update. And then it's the thing that you requested is perfectly there. So like, it's fantastic. Cause there's so many times where I will make a suggestion to a project and it goes nowhere, or it takes months before I even get a notification. Most of the time it just goes nowhere. But the responses when I made that suggestion was in like a day or two. There was like, you know, oh, I'll look into it and stuff like that. And then the next, like, I think it was a couple of weeks later, it was there. So like the tight feedback loop you were talking about is like one of the best examples of why I love to use Invoice Ninja, because it not only did it provide me like the tools that I want, it also means that if I want to contribute, that you're open to those contributions. And that's a fantastic approach.
Well, that's great to hear. First of all, thanks for all your kind words before I came on. It's really nice to hear. Natifier was an amazing suggestion. I hadn't heard of it. And I remember specifically seeing the post, researching it, and realizing, wow, this is great. But going back to Flutter, we see Flutter as kind of our grand vision going forward, where although we're focusing now on mobile apps, you know, we see long-term there's proof of concept of Flutter on the desktop. So we'd love to take our amazing Flutter mobile app and then make it our Windows, Mac, Linux desktop app eventually.
Oh, so, that would be amazing. Yeah.
I
do. I like the Flutter app on the mobile app. It was actually kind of impressive in the sense that I never expected an invoicing system on mobile to be usable. So I'd have to commend you for that, because it's actually like a usable app. And that's very, very rare.
Thanks.
But I'm just curious, what got you started into programming in general?
So programming years ago was, I remember first finding QBasic. We had a 386 SX from Dell. I found QBasic one day, and that was just a momentous occasion. We found it has nibbles and these kind of open source simple games, but it was the first time I could see source code and change it and modify it. And then I got really big into TI-82, the graphing calculator. But then when I went to college and university, I ended up studying sociology. I remember thinking, you know, I program for fun. I need to get a real job. But then once I had a real job, I realized I enjoyed programming more, and then kind of went back to school, and I've done it ever since. I'm really thankful I made the change. I'm really lucky to do what I love for a living.
That's awesome. What was your first, like your earliest job working programming?
Right. So my first job, I had one small job at a web shop, development shop. I spent most of my career at a company called M5 Networks. They're a telecom in New York. And it was a really incredible experience, in part because they started at about 30 employees and then grew to over 200 and was then bought by a public company. So getting to kind of get that growth experience of going through the process was tremendously formative, I think, in my programming approach. And, you know, one of my, the core experiences I took away from that was as the company got bigger, my job got smaller. That, you know, they would have more and more layers of management, and my role became more and more specific. And as a developer, you know, it wasn't ideal for me, honestly. I really liked, at the beginning, I was told, here's a problem, solve it, which to me is ideal. And Invoice Ninja has kind of given that back to me, whereas with Invoice Ninja, there's no management. It's the three of us. We try to build the best app possible. We're able to make what we think are the best technology decisions. I find very often in larger companies, decisions aren't always for technology reasons, but for many other competing factors. And it was a really interesting experience, particularly going to a public company and then seeing the added bureaucracy. And I think, you know, people are amazed, I think, at the progress we made at Invoice Ninja. To me, I'm amazed big companies can make progress. I find as a small company, we have tremendous advantages, right? Going back to the feedback loop, I'm the lead developer, but I'm also the main customer support representative. So being able to both work on the app and then listen directly to customers and see, hey, these are the problems they're experiencing is a tremendous value that I think is hard to replicate in larger companies.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially like the experience of having both sides and then realizing the difference between, you know, having the control and also having the flexibility. So what really made you to decide to basically just open source the whole stack?
Great. So initially we weren't going to. When we initially started, the plan was just to create another competing online platform for invoicing. And I saw there was a lot of competition, but it seemed like a good chance to learn Laravel. So I went along with it. But just every week, every month I was working on the project, I just came across more and more competitors. And I think 6 months in, we realized just how immensely competitive the space was. I'd experienced in the past with open source at M5, I'd open source an autocomplete component for Adobe Flex, which was an amazing experience. It became one of the most robust pieces of software we had at the company because it, you know, I like that idea, enough eyes make all bugs shallow. So speaking with my partner, we decided to open source it, open source everything. And we're lucky we did. It was one of our best decisions. I think we've ended up with a very different product because of it. And in particular, you know, I'm not a fan of these community edition open source projects. I find it can be very limiting. And truthfully, we want our code to be used. So to us, it's in our interest to have as many self-host users as possible using as much code as possible. And that was it, really. And I think it's been really, really helpful on multiple layers, multiple levels. I think in particular for marketing, it's obviously been very good. But more than that, I think just, again, defining the product and improving the product has been essential.
So we had a question from the chat room. Funeral asked, I don't know how serious this person is, but do you guys need a junior Android developer?
Well, if he's interested in learning Flutter, we'd be happy to have him help contribute to the Flutter app. We have an Android and an iOS app, but we're, you know, phasing them out in favor of the new app. But if he's happy, he wants to learn Flutter, I'd be more than happy to help get him set up. It's great to have contributors, and that'd be excellent.
Awesome. I might even contribute too, because after all, I'm supposed to be a Flutter GDE. I should probably start working on this stuff for real for doing some services. I have like 3 mobile apps in my head, but so far they haven't actually got anything but an empty directory so far that does the incrementing counter. That's all it does do so far. Sure. In those 3 projects, but sure, it's a starter project. It's a starter project. Yeah. And actually, I was going to ask a little bit about that. So your backend stuff is all in PHP. Have you considered at some point rewriting that or writing parts of it as Angular Dart so you could share some technologies?
So potentially. Right now, we're just getting started on a version 2 of our app where we're rebuilding a lot of the backend web stuff. But we're using Laravel again. But we consider potentially in a version 3 doing it all Dart. So we're keeping that in mind with the code base to try to extrapolate domain logic, but not right now. I think for right now, my opinion is Laravel is a great solution for a backend web service. In particular, for our self-host community, it's much easier to set up a PHP app right now. In particular, many of our users also use WordPress. So using PHP means they can just install this app alongside apps they already have running. But for version 3, that's definitely something we're keeping in mind and trying to develop with that in the back of our heads.
So when people come to Invoice Ninja, are they initially just trying to figure out how to make a pretty looking bill? Is that where they start?
Some people are all over the place. One of our strengths, I think, is our integrations, both with multiple payment gateways, but also through Zapier. We have a really solid Zapier integration, which opens us up to many, you know, thousands of other apps. So some people come to us to kind of focus on how do I set up this particular integration. But then we have other users who just, you know, want to get paid and, you know, get paid for a simple invoice. We have many, many features, but we certainly find the majority of users use that core feature set, which is invoices, clients, and payments. But then to other users, tasks are essential, expenses are essential. The challenge with invoicing is I think there are a lot of different practices throughout the world. We really want to support or create an international billing application. So that's definitely been a challenge, but something we work towards and keep improving.
And how do you handle the language localization for internationalization?
Sure. So that's all handled in Laravel. We use they have translation support. So we use a project called transifex.com. And so there's one English localization file. And then we have about 300 contributors now who help to update the files, which is incredibly helpful. And then we actually share that then to the Flutter app. So we have Laravel scripts, which kind of take the PHP versions of the translation files and then convert mm-hmm. them to what's needed for the Flutter app and gives us essentially generates Dart code. So that way we can have a single localization kind of code base or stack of files, which we then share between both applications.
Wow. Yeah,
that's cool, very cool. Cool. TransFX is actually a really cool service too, because the TransFX does the thing. They do that. Did you get the benefit of having the open source approach that TransFX does?
I think so. I mean, we have an open source project with them, and then it's also automatically integrated where they read from GitHub automatically. So just by checking in, it updates their site. And the great benefit of sharing the files is from day one with the new mobile app, we had a translated app just by sharing the existing strings, which is really cool.
And you've mentioned two terms here that I know that all our audience is completely familiar with, mostly because I had to look them up too. Laravel, what's that?
So Laravel is a framework for PHP. A good way of comparing it, I think, is kind of like Ruby on Rails. So Ruby is a language, but Rails is the framework that helps speed up development. And so Laravel offers things like active record. So you can have an ORM object relation mapping to your database. And it just speeds up all aspects of web apps. I can't recommend Laravel strongly enough. Things like social login. Rather than spending weeks on this implementation with Laravel, it's just a few lines of code. You add a package and it just works. You configure it. So it's really, I would say, an extremely rapid development framework focusing on web apps and web applications. And it's been worked out really well for us. It's been one of our best decisions early on with technology, just because as Invoice Ninja grew, Laravel has taken off as well. We started with Laravel 4, then now up to Laravel 5.7, and it's just gotten better and better. And so in particular, for building kind of a web-based API, for example, to support a Flutter app, they're a great combination.
And Zapier, I think, was the other one I was confused about.
Sure. Zapier is an amazing web app, their web service. What they do is they provide, essentially, it's a way of abstracting your API. So you can build adapters, and it unifies APIs, their different formats, and it enables you to connect one API to another. So an example, and they have triggers and actions. So either something A occurs, and it triggers some B to happen. So for example, in invoicing, you might have it so that when a new payment is created in the system, it fires a message to Slack and gives you a message in the Slack group. Or vice versa, you could have, when you get some form filled out, it then creates an invoice. And the amazing thing is we, as a small team, couldn't possibly write 1,000 different integrations, but through Zapier, we're able to support all these different integrations just with a single implementation.
Yeah, one of the great things about Zapier is that if you've never heard of it, for people who are listening, there's another service called If This Then That, or IFT, and they do basically the same thing, except Zapier is more powerful and can do like a lot more things. And one of the things that I really like about the Invoice Ninja using Zapier's functionality is that, for example, if you have a CRM and you also want to do invoicing, you can make it where when a lead is turned into a client inside of your CRM, it can automatically generate a new invoice for that client.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
And so if you don't have if I'm not a paying client, how do I get support?
We give support to everyone. My belief is the app should support itself. If there's a question, something you don't understand, I see that as a flag and says that we need to change something in the app. Ideally, we would change all the functionality so no questions are needed. That's best case. Sometimes it means adding a small message. That's worst case. But we need it. We need that support kind of flow of questions, and that's what we use to guide development.
And do you have regular chat rooms and stuff that people can go ask questions?
The easiest way you can email us, but we have a Slack group, which is open. We can also kind of do real-time questions. Then we have a support forum. And those are kind of, I think, the three main ways. Some people tweet us. It's not the easiest to provide support on Twitter, but emailing us, the forum, and the Slack group, probably the best way to support. And yeah, and again, paying us, even if you're a free self-hosted customer, everyone gets support. We want the app to work for everyone. So we don't differentiate.
This is almost too good to be true. I'm really just stunned by this. It's just just amazing.
It's funny. To me, as an engineer, it amazes me other people don't take this approach, right? Because we couldn't have this level of success if we were a closed source program. It just wouldn't be possible. We need that combination of open source and closed source. I mean, one great example is coming from enterprises, QA. So most enterprise companies have massive QA departments with tons of engineers banging on testing the code. We have that for free, right? So when we do a release, we usually wait a little bit to release to our hosted platform. At that point, hundreds of self-host users, not thousands, have already installed the software, tested it, and enables us to release to production with much more confidence than we would have otherwise, especially as such a small team. So to me, this is kind of the only way to go. But again, it takes, you know, I think speaking with investors early on, I think there's a lot of hesitance to open source. People feel you're giving away, you're losing. And we see it as the opposite. We see we're enabling people to give to us. Yeah, and thank God it's worked out well.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great method because it turns out I'm part of your QA team then because I do the self-hosted part of it. And there's one thing that people might consider like a caveat or a catch, but it's not really. There's a $20 white labeling fee. So if you want to have the Invoice Ninja not have like powered by Invoice Ninja on the portal client and stuff like that, you pay a $20 fee a year and then it will white label it. I mean, technically speaking, you could probably take it off yourself if you wanted to, but the $20 a year fee is such a small, like ridiculous fee for something that's so good that I think that people should be like happy to do that. I mean, I am.
Thanks. Nice to hear. It's funny, when we initially launched the app, it was totally free. There was no cost for anything. And we actually got pushback from it. I think many people felt like they wanted to give us something. So we specifically tried to keep the cost incredibly low, especially compared to the hosted platform. I was surprised. When we first launched, we had two products. We had the white label fee, which was $10, and extra designs, which was $20. And we found that the white label is what people were really interested in. So we actually removed the other product, just went with the white label fee. And I was surprised also how honest most people are. I think I was a bit skeptical at first, thinking, well, everyone was just, it's just a line of code. People are just going to comment it out. But most people really want to support the project, are honest, and it's been nice. It's worked out reasonably well.
So I'm also curious now as a business owner. So I have the one way I can collect credit cards, actually it's probably two or three ways I can collect credit cards, killing a few other ones, but my most frequently used one is Square. And I don't pay anything except a percentage when I use that. Are there other online payment services that work that way as well?
Most payment services work that way, where there's a percentage fee. So, for example, if you use us and then use Stripe alongside, you'll pay us, if you use a hosted platform, our monthly fee. Then you'll also have to pay Stripe their percentages. A package like Square or Wave, right, because they're just charging you their fees, they don't charge for the app, but the fees can oftentimes cost more than what you would pay for a monthly service. So with our approach, we essentially, the gateway fees are separate, and then we have our own fee for the product. We also do have a feature where we enable, we're legally allowed to recoup your fees. So it can automatically adjust the invoice based on the payment method selected. It'll then add the fee to the invoice. Maybe you should check about certain jurisdictions do or do not allow it. So you have to kind of check for yourself.
That's very cool. I mean, there's the automation stuff that has now been like the latest versions of Invoice Ninja that added like the late fee and stuff like that. Things that are really tiny that you wouldn't really think about, especially like this where it's a transaction fee, where you're not really going to think about that as a feature that would save you a time and also money and effort. But as soon as you made the announcement that this is coming out, I was like, why did I never think of that before? That's fantastic. So there's a lot of stuff that every time it's like Christmas every time the new. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I'm a big fan of self-hosting. So anytime new features come with the projects that I'm using, especially ones that are doing such like great work in the first place, it's always like just super fun to see. And like when your example of Stripe, you can actually use like PayPal and other things as well, but Stripe is one of my favorite ones. And the fact that you don't have like the best part is that you can have Stripe save all the credit card information. So you don't have to worry about keeping track of that and like having to deal with like PCI compliance and all this other stuff because Stripe handles that on their servers anyway.
Yeah, so, absolutely. It's a great, great feature.
Right. So as far as like the payment systems, how many are there available to you?
I think the number is about 45 now. We have different degrees of support. So, for example, auto billing, we mentioned where we store the card, or the credit card gateway stores the card. That's supported with Stripe, Braintree, WePay, and GoCardless. But then there are another 35, 40 other gateways that we use, that we support. And we're looking to add, we try to listen to feedback based from our user base. Many times they're added by the community. It's another great example where open source really helps, where people create pull requests, adding the gateway that they themselves want to use. But yeah, that's definitely a key feature of the app.
Nice. So speaking of the different features, there's newer features that are coming out in the latest, like the next version. You're saying that version 2 or V2, like first, we just kind of clarify something. You're currently on version like 4.5, I think. And correct. You're now it's calling it V2. Is this more like a rebuilding of the whole system and that, or is it going to be like 5.0 when it does release?
Right. That's a good question. Initially, the thought was to label it version 5, just because we're all developers. We know it's version 4. This is the next big version. But we realized most of our hosted community don't understand the versioning. They just know it's the latest version. And announcing we're going to work on version 5, we thought didn't provide much clarity. So we made a decision from a marketing perspective just to use version 2 as the label, which had its own problems because some of the hosted or the self-host community knew about it. And they were like, that doesn't make sense. Why is it version 2? But again, I think that's one of the challenges of trying to communicate to two communities at once, which kind of understand different things. But I think it's the right choice. We've stuck with version 2. We're trying to use it everywhere. And version 2 is pretty much a ground-up rebuild. We're going to bring over a lot of the functionality. So, for example, the Kanban board, time tracker, a lot of the parts of the app we could just bring over as a whole. But we're going to change some of the underlying technologies. We started the app 5 years ago, and a lot of better technologies are available. So, for example, we're using Knockout.js for a lot of the dynamic JavaScript code, which was a great library, but it's a bit dated now. And I much prefer Vue.js. So we're going to port a lot of the Knockout functionality to Vue. Additionally, we use Bootstrap 3 for the CSS. Bootstrap 4 is much better. So we're going to upgrade to Bootstrap 4. And then we're also going to take a lot of what we've learned about the domain. There are certain features we'd love to add, but they're kind of too low level to safely add in version 1. So this gives us the opportunity to build what we think will be a really phenomenal application. We think V1 is excellent. We just think V2 can be even better.
Okay, so it's mainly just like the only the people who are going to notice the difference of the numbers is just the self-hosted people anyway.
Correct. That's right. And okay. Then the transition should be painless. We plan to have a full migration. So both hosted or self-hosted users can just click a button. It brings the data over. If they're happy with it, they can switch to version 2. Otherwise, they can stick with version 1. We'll continue to support both for a long time. This is just about planning, not for the next 6 months, but the next 6 years and kind of the long-term picture.
That's awesome. Is this part of, like, I saw on the roadmap a while ago that there was a support for, like, or you're trying to work on support for automatic installations for the self-hosted version, or not automatic, but automatic upgrades. I'm sorry.
Updates. Yes. Yeah.
I looked into the roadmap and haven't seen it yet. So is that going to be put into like the version 2?
You would like to. We currently have a shell script also from the community. Someone wrote, it's a pretty simple script, but it runs through the process. It works pretty well. It just downloads the latest version and then updates it. But we'd definitely like to integrate this into version 2 and support this. It's also worth mentioning, we're excited that we've contracted Titan.co, who are really one of the premier Laravel shops, to act as technical advisors, which we're thrilled about to have their involvement. And yeah, we're just trying to do it right. You know, I think it's nice that we're a company mostly led by developers, so we can make what we think really are the best decisions for the code base. I'm lucky to have an amazing partner, Shalom, who is both the investor and the CEO. But I think he understands and appreciates the importance of the quality of the code base and the lasting impact that'll have on our success.
Very nice. Just curious, what is the set of databases, like all the different types of databases that you support?
So just MySQL. Laravel does support SQLite and Postgres. We initially did support all three. However, I found in practice that to do really optimized code with MySQL, sometimes you need custom queries. And just the maintenance involved or the work involved to support these custom implementations for both Postgres and SQLite was just too much, especially considering the user base is much smaller relative to MySQL. So we made a decision early on just to focus on that one database. And I think it was the right decision.
Nice. I mean, what about the compatibility with like MariaDB? Like, because they're very similar. Is there any kind of like crossover there?
Yep, we support Maria. We actually use Maria ourselves in production for our hosted platform. We find it's really performant. So we do support Maria. I guess in my mind, I just consider it MySQL because we haven't found any incompatibility issues. And it's excellent. It performs amazingly well. I think that's a testament both to the database, but also Laravel and PHP in general, where these days you can get such server capacity to handle it that it's worked out to give us incredible, much more capacity than we need.
So I want to circle back around to Flutter, because again, that's my area of interest. Tell us your experience of starting with two different code bases and having to maintain stuff in two different languages and different layouts, things like that, and then shifting over to Flutter. What was that like for you?
As amazing as it sounds. So the way right? I mean, there goes a code base. Like, the way the development was split up is I was lead on the web application, and our partner Dave was lead on the mobile applications. And it was just a lot of work. You know, he was one guy doing two apps, trying to build the best apps possible. And it was just, too much for our small team. So we actually switched. So my background is web, so I switched to mobile for this. And Dave is actually now switching to web, and he's leading the V2 development. Flutter has just been, it's just fun. It's just a really nice framework. It reminds me personally a lot of Adobe Flex. This is a framework from about 10 years ago, and it was trying to solve the cross-browser issues. A few nice things to me about Flutter. One is the learning curve. I think people question Dart, but if you actually give Dart a try, you kind of know it already. It's kind of deja vu coding, where it feels like JavaScript or PHP or Java. It's just a curly brace language, and you kind of know it without even thinking. I think Flutter is more of a learning curve. What I think is nice about Flutter is the layered approach. So we've been able to be incredibly productive, and I don't consider myself a Flutter expert, right? I understand the top level of widgets, but there's a tremendous amount of depth that's available that I haven't even started to dig into yet, that you can kind of really customize anything. And again, I think that's the kind of at the heart of Flutter is its layered approach, where you can either work at a very top layer, or if you need to make custom changes, you can drill all the way down because it's all open source. It's been a great choice. I'm amazed personally about how well it's worked. I think the beta label scared us a little bit. But really, I think Google, just being safe, they've been using themselves internally for a long time, and we've had a pretty smooth experience. I think if we were using any other framework, we'd have the same kinds of problems. I don't think this is kind of a really difficult beta experience. It's been a really smooth experience relatively. And again, now because it's a single code base for each feature, rather than, you know, in the past, we build one web feature and have to build the same thing two more times, and you end up compromising, right? You just don't have, especially after you build the first one, then to have to build it again, you don't have that same drive necessarily. You want to move on to the next feature. So whereas now every feature I'm adding, I know this is going to be on Android, it's going to be an iPhone, I know it's going to look exactly the same. And then in the back of my mind, I believe and hope that one day this will also be a desktop app. So I think just knowing the productivity each line of code I'm adding will have, or will, and how it'll enhance our app, makes it really rewarding. The other thing I'll say about Flutter is it's one of the best experiences I've found to take a vision of what the app should be, how it should look, and realize it in an application. I find my background is web, and I've spent years frustrated by CSS, you know, centering, aligning, adjusting just to get it exactly how I want it to look. And very often you just give up. You say, all right, it's close enough, and you move on. Flutter has it'll pass. Flutter, I find, has a very different paradigm. So there is that learning curve, but it just once you get it, it's just so much easier to take the visions in your head or the spec you're trying to implement and actually realize it in code or in an application. So I can't say enough good things about Flutter. It's worth mentioning, in my spare time, I ended up making a website for Flutter. I guess that's what a web developer does. It's called itsallwidgets.com. And you can go there and check out all the amazing new apps that are getting released with Flutter. And that's also been a great experience for me over these past 6 months, just to see the incredible progress the community is seeing and the growth it's seeing. I personally have never seen anything like it. It's just exponential growth. In particular, I'd say the third-party ecosystem, which is one area which I thought was kind of weak about 6 months ago. But now it's come miles forward. There are new packages every day, many of them extremely high quality. I think Flutter is a great choice for technologies. And again, I just think it's just early days. We're just getting started. I think if you look at the future, there are many other platforms now, and Flutter is not the primary choice. But I think I like the Gretzky quote, right? Skate where the puck's going. I think if you look at technologies 2 years from now, 4 years from now, Flutter can do things that other platforms I don't think can, or can't do it as well. So I personally believe there'll be a lot more developers switching to it.
Did you consider React Native rather than Flutter?
Yes. Yeah. I've been watching React Native for a long time. I think it's a great technology. It's clearly a great technology based on the numbers of users it has. I find, although it's solving the same problem as Flutter, it's a very different approach to the solution. Not to speak about React Native in particular, but I think all of these other solutions suffer from what I see as leaky abstractions, where these frameworks should provide abstractions, right? They should make coding easier. But this term leaky abstractions is the idea that they're good abstractions, but they're not perfect abstractions. And with Xamarin, React Native, any of these platforms, you'll very often find you're dealing with errors and it's unclear which layer, which level the error is coming from. So I think one thing really nice about Flutter is how much of it's Dart top to bottom. There's the C++ engine all the way at the bottom. But the errors you typically see as a developer are incredibly clear because they all exist in one single environment. You know, the Dart runtime, it's in there. So we considered Xamarin, we considered React Native for quite a while. But I'm happy we waited. I don't think those other platforms can offer the same kind of developer experience that Flutter can. And the challenge I think now is I don't see any other company being able to create something like Flutter. I mean, Google is a massive company, obviously, and they spent years developing it. This has been a huge endeavor. And I think they now have an advantage that'll be very hard for other companies to catch up with.
And I appreciate that it's all open source from top to bottom as well. So it's, people they get pull requests and they track stuff on GitHub. This is so cool. I can submit an issue in GitHub and the Dart engineers and the Flutter engineers actually notice it and rate it and score it. It's huge.
And reply. I find the developer community in Flutter to be amazing, amazingly receptive and open. You have the heads of Flutter on Twitter replying to comments. Really, really, they clearly care. I mean, there's no question. I think they're passionate about the project. I understand where they're coming from. I think they put a lot of their energy into it, and they want it to be successful. But I have tremendous respect for how they're managing the project. We're managing Invoice Ninja, 300 open issues. I have a hard time tracking it. I think they have 20,000 issues on the Flutter project. So I can't imagine how they're managing it. They do a reasonably good job considering. Everyone being so accessible is definitely a major advantage when working on the platform.
I've been a web designer, web developer for many years. And I was looking at this one called Kotlin, but you're kind of getting me excited about trying Flutter and Dart more. So I'm going to have to, after the show, I'm going to have to check it out some more.
Highly recommend it. If you have questions, happy to help.
Awesome.
But yeah, I think it's a great experience. And again, I think Kotlin makes sense. If you're designing an Android only app, then Kotlin's a great language, offers a lot of benefits. But if you want an iOS app also, right, I think that's where obviously Kotlin will suffer. I think Flutter's worth considering.
I was on stage last year with Wim Wheeler, who's the chief developer advocate for Google, actually works for Google. And one of the things he emphasized in my talk, as I was writing the talk for this, I think it was for Scale last year, is that the cross-platform thing is actually sort of the least interesting part of Flutter. There, you know, what's more interesting are things like hot reload and speed, and that it's all source all the way down to the Skia layer. And by the way, and it's also cross platform. So I've also been saying in the talks that I give, the 5-minute lightning talks, and also the longer form talks, I've been saying that even if you're only developing for iOS or Android, Flutter is still worth looking at.
Definitely, 100%. I think if you're doing both, then it's almost a no-brainer. But I 100% agree. I think it's just a different development paradigm. So even though Kotlin's a great language, I think the Flutter methodology to developing UIs or designing UIs, it's just a next step forward. I think what something people don't realize is the pedigree, right? The creators of Flutter also worked on HTML5 and also worked on Chrome. So they have tremendous experience with this domain. And it's pretty cool what they've created. They should be very proud.
And how is that hot reload in practice?
Yeah, it works. It works really well. I can't imagine not having it, right? It's one of those things that once you start using it, it would be scary to think of having to develop without it. Going back to earlier, talked about kind of pixel perfect design, particularly with CSS being so challenging. With hot reload, specifically when you want to align the layouts, being able to just quickly iterate saves a tremendous amount of time. Not just time, I think it just gives you the motivation. I think when you have to wait, 5 minutes for it to build again, it's hard to keep the context in your head. So being able to just very, very quickly change things. And also, not just is it quickly reload, it retains the state. So very often when you rebuild the app, that's the quick part. You have to then get the app back into the particular state it was in. You click this button and that button. And that's just a very slow process. So being able to just instantly reload, have the state, make changes is massive. Again, it's one of those things that once you start using it and develop with it, I'd be scared to have to develop without it. It just seems the only way to do development. So it works pretty much as well. Once in a while, I think if you change too much, or for example, if you add a package, you'd have to do a full reload, but it works surprisingly well.
Yeah, the hot restart, I have that on a separate key on my Visual Studio Code to do that with, is only like a second and a half. You know, the hot reload is like a half a second when it works. But even restarting the app from square one is not that long either. It's just amazing how what the cycles are. In fact, somebody argued, well, why isn't there where do I get something like a layout prototyper? And I go, you don't need one. The app itself can be that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost a live preview. Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Yeah, it's just really amazing. So I'm just looking down my list. So I didn't realize, maybe you told me this, that you're the It's All Widgets guy. I was wondering who's behind
one
that.
One of. Okay. So I'm working with three other friends. The idea was actually a friend, Thomas, had the idea for the name. Initially, I wanted to create a podcast. I was new to Flutter, really wanted to get involved in the community, like to talk. There weren't any Flutter podcasts, so I thought, you know, that'd be a good addition. But I was speaking to other developers, you know, other people were already working on it. So we ended up with this domain, itsallwidgets.com, and nothing to do with it. Then we had the idea just to turn it into, it kind of made sense for a Flutter app listing, because it's all widgets. Everything in Flutter is built out of widgets. It's kind of the idea. And it's been great. It's been a really great experience, particularly just getting to see the rate of apps. Also, the broad spectrum, the different kinds of apps you can build with Flutter.
And
the site's worked out really well. Amazingly, Google now linked to it from their showcase page. This happened with the Google redesign, which has been a tremendous boost, provided a tremendous boost in traffic to us, and was really generous of them to include a community project like that. And it's been great. It's kind of, it's built with Laravel and Vue.js. It's kind of like a toy project. It's fun for me to work on when I'm not working on the Invoice Ninja app. But it's been really cool. And then I'll mention quickly two other projects I'm working on. So with Flutter, one of the big questions is the approach to use for state, to state management. And that essentially is, where is all the data stored in your app? And there are three or four kind of leading choices. One is Redux, the one that we use, and that kind of comes from React Native. I won't go into all the differences. There's Redux, Block, Scoped Model, and then RxVMS. And they're all good options. I think a lot of it comes down to the kind of app you're building. And for our particular app, Redux was the right choice. Just to briefly explain why, a key feature for us was persistence. We wanted that as you use the app, everything you do is stored and persisted. So even if you quit the app and you come back to it, it's right back to that same state. So for example, when you load the app, we're going to load all your invoices and all your clients. And if you have a big account, we don't want to keep reloading that data every time you launch the app. And then furthermore, if you start creating a record and it's not saved yet, we want to make sure that record, partially created record, is there for you when you restart the app. So for that particular problem, Redux is an amazing solution. With Redux, all the data is stored in a single object. So you can just JSON serialize the entire nested object, store that to the phone, and then reload it when the app launches again. So Redux has worked out incredibly well. The projects I'm working on are try to solve some of the problems people see with Redux. And there are two, I think, main problems. One is it involves more boilerplate code than other approaches. And the other is navigating can be a bit hard. You end up having to do a lot of search and searching the code base to find the particular files you're looking for. So the two projects we've been working on, one is a code generator. So if you have a kind of a CRUD-based app, create, read, update, delete, it can automatically generate a lot of the boilerplate Redux code, which enables much quicker, much more rapid development. And then we're also working on a navigation plugin for Visual Studio, for Android Studio, which enables you right-click and it'll find the Redux component in the code base. And these are both projects driven by kind of my own personal itches, you know, trying to make my workflows better, but hopefully sharing them with community helps improve them and helps other people.
What does your wire protocol look like between the mobile app and your servers?
Sure, really simple. It's just a JSON REST-based API. So we use Laravel on the server. Having initial mobile apps made this process much easier. We'd already hardened the API and kind of implemented most of the features needed to support a mobile app. So we're able to kind of switch over this new platform pretty easily, all things considered. But it's really a pretty simple API. We load a list of data. We reload data as needed. We use kind of an updated at flag to make sure your data is fresh. But it's a pretty simple implementation. We're not using GraphQL or anything like that.
And is the API public? Is it stable? Can I write apps that integrate with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have our API documented on our site. But anyone can use the API. And that's, again, been really helpful to us. It's been one of the things that helped really harden the API and make sure any edge cases are ironed out. But yeah, both for our hosted platform and our self-host platform. And so, for example, Zapier would use the API to connect to either instance, the mobile app, and custom integrations also. We also have a simple PHP SDK, which acts as a wrapper for the API. So if you're using Laravel or another PHP framework, you can just install this SDK and get classes. You could say invoices, :, all, and it'll automatically handle the calls for you and just pass you the objects.
Awesome. I think Michael had a couple more questions.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I was curious what the response has been for the new mobile apps that you've been releasing with Flutter. Like response from the users, I mean.
Yeah, thankfully amazing. I think the most common words are fast. That's probably the number one word. And we get the word love a lot. And that, to me, that's kind of the key measure of our success with software. I find that people say, you know, we used your app and we like it. That's a flag. That means there's a problem with your app. They have to write you, we used your app and we love it. And we get that, thankfully, with the web app and now with the new mobile app also. Another thing which I was nervous about is if you're a developer, you can probably tell it's a Flutter app. There are some very small indicators that differentiate, but nobody's noticed it, right? Everyone assumes it's a completely native app. To them, it just works exactly as expected. So we've been thrilled with it. I think the focus now is completing the app. So we released an initial version, which has the core functionality, invoices, clients, products, payments. So now we need to, as I mentioned earlier, implement tasks and expenses so we can sunset our legacy apps and make this our only mobile app. And that's what I'm working on now, which is a lot of fun.
Very cool. I mean, the response I've had for using it, like it's kind of ridiculous for me to be so much of a fanboy for a self-hosted piece of software, because there's all kinds of different self-hosted ones, but there's I've actually used, before I went to Invoice Ninja, I used probably three or four different open source invoicing and management apps like that, and it wasn't until Invoice Ninja where I was actually excited to use the project, because everybody knows that one of the worst things about doing freelancing is the business side and the invoicing side and all that stuff. Some people might like to do that. Maybe that's their job. I don't know. But for me, I think it's one of the worst things. So when I first found Invoice Ninja, it was fantastic to just start using something that solved every problem that I had, and then also things that I never even thought of. So having the app approach is so nice, especially with the whole structure you're talking about, how if the app crashes, you don't lose your data. And that's an incredibly important thing for an invoicing system. So I think the idea that if you're bothered by someone saying that they like it, is actually quite funny, because I would have to agree that if they weren't saying that they love it, there's an issue that you might need to fix it. Because in this case, I do think it would be safe to say that I do love this project. So I'm just curious also, what do you think where you see Invoice Ninja coming for the next few years or so?
First off, that's great to hear. Really appreciate it. Just one point, I'll clarify the last statement. Amazing thing with Flutter is up until now, we've actually had zero crashes. And I think that's part of how Flutter works, is if something fails, you'll see in the UI the part of the app that's failing, but the rest of the app continues to function, which I think is another just great byproduct of using Flutter. Whereas with our native apps, you know, if you develop iOS apps, any null point or any problem with Objective-C, the app crashes immediately and the user's out. I find it provides a much better user experience. If the app keeps working, they can avoid that section but use the rest of the app. They can also then send us screenshots with very specific errors, which is amazing. So to go back to the future of Invoice Ninja, a part of it comes down to my philosophy of the future of the world, right? I see right now having a self-host server is kind of special, takes a certain level of experience, and I see that becoming more and more common. We see over time these abstractions make technology simpler and simpler to use. So I think if we look 5-10 years from now, I think it'll be very common for everyone to have their own personal cloud. And if that happens, I think self-host software will have a whole new importance. Because if everyone has personal clouds, they then need software to run on those personal clouds. And that's kind of what we're pushing towards. With the software itself, as I mentioned earlier, we potentially will build a third version using Dart, but our immediate focuses are the second version and then also taking this mobile app and hopefully bringing it to the desktop. We think that'll give us an amazing advantage over our competitors, where we'll have a really solid desktop app along with the mobile app and along with the web apps. And then in general, you know, I see freelancing growing and being an increased demand for invoicing apps. So we hope to just continue growing, continue adding features, and just continue listening to our user base and making the app better.
That's awesome. I'm curious, of all the great features that are in Invoice Ninja, I know I'm fanboying, but of all the great features, what do you think is like your top three that you think are like what people should really know about?
Sure, that's a great question. I would say that number one is the number of payment gateways we support. Most other options support 2, 4, 6. I mean, that'd be the maximum. I haven't found any other platform that has anywhere near the number of options we provide. Another aspect I would say is Zapier. I think Zapier is an incredibly powerful solution. We actually did our first Zapier implementation a few years ago, and then they came out with a new platform called their CLI platform. So I personally rebuilt the Zapier integration about a year ago, and the new integration is incredibly powerful and can do pretty much anything. So if you need to support some sort of integration, I think that that's really a powerful feature. And then now, to me, the mobile app. I think the mobile app really shines. We've really tried to build the essential complementary app, where we don't have settings on the mobile app. That's kind of still needed. You need to use the web app for that. But we try to make it so that, as you said, you actually can use it to make invoices, send invoices, and manage the web app. So I think those would be the top three.
Cool. Well, we're almost out of time. And now we're going to ask a question that's probably the most difficult question you're going to answer, which is there anything we didn't talk about that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go?
So I think we covered a lot. I think we covered everything. So nothing in particular that I would add.
Cool. And actually, I was also curious, I didn't ask this earlier, but what editor do you use to edit Flutter code?
So initially, I was using Visual Studio, VS Code. I found it was much faster than Android Studio. But mm-hmm. then my amazing partners agreed to upgrade my hardware. I got a recent PC. And I find with good hardware, Android Studio runs really well. So I've switched back. I find that it has just a couple more integrations with Flutter that I find really mm-hmm. useful. So now Android Studio is my main IDE. And then I use Atom for the PHP code, which I also really like.
Cool. And I guess it's going to answer my next question, which is what are your favorite text editors? But I think you just answered that, so I'll just leave that at that. When you have to write script programs, scripting language stuff, what's your favorite scripting language?
Probably PHP. I've been using it for a long, long, long time. I find it's just reliable. It's simple. I know it gets a bad rap sometimes, but I think people like to hate what's popular. But it serves a purpose, especially at this point. PHP 7, we saw it ourselves. The jump from PHP 5 to PHP 7 in performance was just amazing. We did nothing, right? We just changed the config, update the servers, and the load on the servers was just dropped. Memory load usage dropped. It's been a great improvement. So we're pretty happy with PHP.
Well, hello, Corin. It's been wonderful chatting with you about Invoice Ninja, including all the great conversation we had about Flutter. I think I'm going to be looking in more detail at your code and see if there's any thing I can issue a pull request for. Maybe you'll start seeing some good from me on this. That'll be great. That'd be awesome. I want to get my hands on a mature project like you already have, which is really good. So that'll be awfully fun. And I really appreciate that you contacted me to be on the show today, and I'm glad we're able to work that out.
Thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. That was Hillel Corin talking to us about Invoice Ninja. What did you think there, Michael?
I was a really great experience to get. I appreciate you having me as a co-host, especially for this one, because I've been a big fan and I've talked to Hillel for, in the forums and stuff like that. But to have a conversation, especially on a podcast like this, was a fantastic experience. So I think it went very well.
Yeah, definitely. And you definitely did a great job as your first co-host. Of course, you already have a podcast, right? So what's your other podcast that you do?
Yeah, I actually have two other podcasts. I do This Week in Linux at tuxdigital.com/This Week in Linux, and I also do Destination Linux at destinationlinux.org.
Cool. And I'm just going to have you plug that at the end of the show too, but you already did. It's fine. So let's talk about who's coming up next. Next week we have Kong, which is an API gateway. It means it's a form of middleware between computing clients and your API-based applications. And Kong easily and consistently extends the features of your API. It should be kind of fun. Following that is Vista, which is a comprehensive suite of patient care software developed by the Department of Veterans Affairs over the past 35 years. Boy, I wonder what language that's written if it's 35 years old. I can't wait to find out. I wonder how much of it's still COBOL. Anyway, after that is OpenVPN, which I cannot believe we haven't had on the show yet in the 11 years we've been running, but apparently we haven't. So OpenVPN is going to be on talking about that. YataDB is a new kind of database company delivering a proven database engineer application, enhancing simplicity, security, stability, and scalability. And then rounding out the year is Flutter. Eric Seidel, I hope I didn't mispronounce his name, Eric Seidel, I think it is, is a Google employee one of the leaders on the Flutter team, and he's going to come on at the end of December to talk about Flutter. And so we'll be kind of a repeat of this show, but we'll be getting some inside scoop, I hope. So it'll be really fun. So that's running out the year. I've opened up January, but I haven't sent out any email yet to fill those yet. So I guess that's what I'm doing this weekend coming up. I have to start sending out my flurry of 20, 30 emails in order to fill five slots. It's kind of a hard return, but that's the way that works. I was at over the weekend. Oh, wait, sorry. I've got some more stuff to say. So if you want to find out who I'm actually talking to, twit.tv/floss is the homepage for this show. And linked from there is our upcoming guest list. And if you have other suggestions, please tell the project leader or the community coordinator to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. You don't have to write that down. That's actually all you have to remember is twit.tv/floss, because that's going to take you right to the right page for this. You probably already been there. If you're subscribed to this show, you've probably been there already. So that's cool. I have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. Generally, every once in a while it's a different day, but most times it's Wednesdays. And it's 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, which is not the same all year round for you guys in Europe, because we switch around a little bit. So that's always a little complicated for my European clientele, things like that. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus for at least a few more weeks until they shut that thing down. And at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus, again, for a few more weeks until they shut it down. And also tweets over to @Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. Again, I'm working on a new location for Google Plus. Some people have suggested something like Brontosaurus, dinosaur or something. Mastodon. There we go. Something ancient. But when I went and looked at that, they only allow up to 500 characters. And I know some of my posts have been longer than that. So I don't know that that's going to be the solution.
Mastodon is more of a Twitter thing. You could check out Diaspora or Minds. Those are both very similar to Google Plus.
I'll chat with you after the show then about that. So that'll be good. Anyway, working that out, I was at Siegel last weekend. Had a great time. I got to see a number of great talks. And as usual, there were three or four talks across from each other that I all wanted to see at the same time. So that was really annoying. Hopefully they've recorded all of them. They're putting those up on their site. It was absolutely wonderful. It was their sixth year doing it. And I think they had something like 2,000 people. Which is really, really amazing. I mean, it made the expo hall kind of crowded most of the time on the breaks and stuff. So it was a lot of fun. Really glad I got a chance to go up there and meet Adam in person and just basically hang out. They had great parties too, which was really amazing for a free conference. And they threw parties. That is pretty, pretty cool. And I really appreciate the dozen or so people of you that came up to me and said, "Hey, I really like Floss Weekly." So that was great. You did exactly what I asked you to do, which is come up and see me if you see me there. I'm going to be at KubeCon in December, again up in Seattle. So that's hosted by the CNCF, and they're actually putting me up in a hotel, which is really cool, just for being press, which is really, really nice. I'm impressed that for press they do that. That's really cool. Anything else you want to plug there, Michael?
No, not really. Just DexterDigital.com and DestinationLinux.org is my main things. But I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Awesome. Well, it's been great. Sorry I didn't hit the cough switch on that, even though I'm coughing. So, Michael, thanks for being the co-host. And you did a really great job.
I appreciate that. I think I'll try to do it better next time anyway. But, always room for improvement. But I appreciate the kind words about that.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.